Yeah.
Bong Tobo. Yeah, whose decision to start the sub 2000? Is it the investigation or you guys?
The answer that's in the FAQs here, and I can't make any comments on NTSB report.
Not about the decision is on their side or on your side?
No, the decision to not fly the sub. No, that is our decision.
That's your decision. And what time period are we looking at for you guys to finish the decision?
We're awaiting the NTSB report.
Okay. So when we get those back, are we going back to the regular mileage program when we get the sub 2000 like we have?
That is everyone's intent. We are, as I said, we are in discussions with Alaska Airlines what will happen in the future.
So is the mileage program sent to a specific aircraft, not in this route? Is that how it works?
No. The mileage program is linked to all our flights in the Raven Air group.
No, so the Alaska Airlines mileage.
Our agreement with Alaska Airlines was linked to the Saab 2000 flying down here. It was under what you call a capacity purchase agreement. So they do all the sales and marketing, and we operate the flight for them. Yes.
Just a little information. The cost of living in this community prior to the hike in the increase in your airfares was 64% higher than his Anchorage. And it costs a lot to live this. And you make a lot. We're probably minimum wage making $100,000 a year. You know, that's the equivalent, you know. So that's something to consider. The reason it's 64% higher, primarily a lot of it's due to the high cost of transportation in and out of here. And now it's just gone up. I don't know where that 64% is any longer. So just want to be aware.
Thank you. Related to that.
So you spoke about your pilots are well trained and well experienced. In the past, when Alaska Air started flying the jets, before the busy seasons, they would have empty planes flying doing touch and goes. When the Saab came in, they had the plane doing empty touch and goes. I've never seen the Dash 8 do that. And my son has to fly on that plane, and my other son made it in. I'm sorry, I'm trying not to be emotional, but this is an emotional thing to me. What are you doing to make sure those pilots are trained to land at our airport?
We have, as I mentioned earlier, we've put a program in place to ensure that we meet more than the minimum standards for the pilots. We put new standards in place for the scheduled services that we're flying down here. We have had all our pilots that are flying down here have flown with what you call a check airman, which is the airmen that are qualified to ensure and checking, that's why they're called check airmen, that they have the right experience and qualifications and meet our standards coming in out of here. All the pilots that are flying down here have landed and taken off both directions, the back door and the front door here in the airport at Dutch Harbour. So we have put higher standards in place to make sure that they have got the experience in place, and there's ongoing training, there are ongoing standards to make sure that they still have the experience to come down here. If there's a period of time when they haven't been flying, they need to go through another check with a check airman again. I assure you, we have done all possible to put the highest standards we possibly can to ensure that our experienced pilots are able and confident and qualified to fly here into Dutch Harbour.
I'm sure to see it. Where's your?
Well, it has been happening. I mean, when we were bringing down some of the charter flights, they were coming down with check airmen to build up their hours and their experience. So. But though, again, if you go back to, I think for those involved with the meeting we had soon after on the Friday night with the City Council, the standards that were required at that time are different. All our standards are now are higher. So we have ensured that our pilots are experienced according to our new higher standards.
So can I also add,
really sorry that you feel like that. I'm a mother too, and I can totally understand your emotions. What we can tell you though is that a lot of those pilots that are flying in here have been doing so as charters for several years, many years, some the full 10 years that we've been coming in here. So it might look like that it's this new airline with this new plane and new pilots coming in here, but many, 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 if not all of them, have a lot of experience coming into here, as well as other airports that are considered, what's the term we use?
Special qualification
airports.
Just to add to that, I think there's some, you have to gain our trust back as a community. But I want to talk about the socioeconomic impact of the crash. And I don't think it's been quantified yet, but if you look at the economic impact it had on our local businesses. And we are a hub zone. We cater to Akaten, Nikolsky, Atka, the Pribilofs. And alluding back to the healthcare, when we have a Medicaid patient fly from Atka to land at Dutch Harbor to wait on standby anywhere from 10 days to 2 weeks, that's an impact on our Indian Health Service dollars. Now, we are managed by a consortium, and that pool of money gets diminished if a person has to is waiting on standby in this community for up to 2 weeks just to get a seat. But I would like to see this, I would like to speak with you after this meeting to lay out a dynamic to where there's cross-agency communication so this gets addressed, because we do, as Yunungan, feel that this is a violation of our trust responsibility. Going back to the economic impact of this crash, I know of several businesses locally that were impacted. They'll feel it in their algorithm of their financials at the end of the year when they file their taxes, but there is a degree of trust that has to be, that you have to gain from us as a community. And I think what we could do is keep the lines of communication open, but I would like to see some of the issues repaired when it comes to our healthcare system, as you know, whether it's in this community or Nikolsky or Atka or the Pribilofs.
And please let's talk, and I can learn some more from you on what the challenges you've got.
So, can we get a commitment from Raven, that white paper you referred to in the city put out? What we want to do, I think the ultimate goal is to see this runway in a condition where it's not restricted to one or maybe two planes. But would Raven commit to do everything they possibly can to lobby our congressional delegation into getting this runway in a condition where it would allow other assets to be able to be put on this runway that can meet the demand that is here? Flying these Dash 8s, I don't see how you're going to do it. We came born and raised in this community, so the first flights that we flew in and out of here once a month with a DC-3. But we've seen Pan Air struggle with a Saab 340s, sometimes 10 or 11 flights a day, crazy amounts. But you only have 10 of these Dash 8s and a bigger route than Pan Air had. So, it gives me I kind of think maybe Raven bit off more than they could chew without that Saab 2000. But anyway, would you commit to helping this community get this runway in a condition that would be, that would allow
what I can commit to is taking that back to our CEO and our board to say the community has asked for that support. We're aware that the white paper is in place. I can't commit personally to that here and now, I can commit that we will certainly discuss it and see what we can do, and we're open to any discussions. Yeah, of course.
Try not to beat you up. Just a question again, to go back a little more into the training issue, and I know it's there's a line you can't cross about talking about the past, but one of the concerns when we see numbers of hours or lifetime hours of a pilot is relative experience to Dutch Harbor. And the concern would be, I guess the question is, do you have a, in that training that you've expanded, is there a requirement for a pilot to experience different weather conditions out here? Because it seems to me that in a system where a guy might only fly out here once in a while, you might get lucky and get some really nice days. To check a guy off, does he have to go through different wind directions and different weather that we get out here? I don't, this place has a reputation for having terrible weather, and I haven't lived in other places in the state. I know they've got stuff that can compete, but I think this is pretty unique. And I think that's the core of the questions about training. That's the core of what we want to hear, is that people have some real time here in various conditions. A day like today is completely different than many other days. And how does a guy build that experience? You could have lots of hours or a few hours, but if you don't have that kind of local experience, I think it would be important to me in the confidence arena to know that here's Joe Pilot, here's a picture of his face. He's done so many X number of landings in Dutch Harbor. You know, previously I was pretty familiar with all the pilots. You get on the plane and even if I didn't know him by name, I was like, I know that guy, I've seen that guy. You know, it would help to see some faces and maybe a little, they could spend a little time glad handing at the airport or something, at least so you know, hey, that's my guy. I've flown with him before. Those kind of things might be a benefit, but the concern about training is not just, you know, a lot of things can get lost in numbers. You can have a lot of numbers, but was it effective at having a guy experience some of the really bad days that we see out here? I watched a couple flights a month or so ago, two flights coming from Dillingham in the afternoon, and it was pretty nasty outside. I was surprised that they were coming. I watched the first one come in and land. As soon as he landed, the other one turned around and went back. It kind of made me question, I mean, it's good that the guy landed, called the other guy and said, this is too bad, or you shouldn't be in here, but at some point, just having that local knowledge is key. So I think it's key all over Alaska, but I think that piece of that training program and some explanation of that to us could help the confidence thing a lot.
We used to have pilots that lived out here too.
Well, and previously some of the guys, as she said, that were flying the Saab, had, we knew them because they lived here and they flew the Goose or whatever, and they had a lot of intimate knowledge of the winds and things out here, right? Yeah. So that builds our confidence that we know that guy.
It's not my area of expertise. I just know that in terms of the time and effort, the change in our processes and procedures, the release procedures that we have, looking at the weather, they have all been closely analyzed. And of course, we've got the experience as well of all those pilots who are at Penn Air to help us with that as well. So we've been relying on that. But yes, I hear you, I assure you, I would not be getting on the aircraft unless I was confident in the pilot group. And
but you
know. I don't know all my pilots. I don't.
I watched a couple weeks ago take off 7:30 at night into the dark, and that impressed me as unusual. It's rare to see an airplane here late in the evening after dark and departing. That's, you see that, it raises your antenna. You know, what's going on?
In twilight, you can take off in the dark, but you cannot land in the dark.
Yeah, I guess as far as a confidence, I've been here 30 years, and when I see a plane on the ground after dark, I think something's wrong, or they're broke, or they're stuck because of weather. They're going to end up here overnight, and that's happened in the past. So it's an unusual thing to see, and in this context, it's kind of like, well, I don't know if I want to be on that one.
Sir, yeah, I have heard that the good experienced pilots quit when you guys took over. There is any possible way that you guys can get back those good pilots flying back here on those planes, the SAPs especially?
I've already covered in terms of the Saab coming in. We won't be looking at that until we've had the NTSB report. Well, let me. Sorry.
Let me do one more here, and I'll talk about safety. I think the community has pretty much spoken loud and clear that the economics of flying in and out of here is pretty important to them. Along with what the delegates were saying there, as far as pilot qualifications and qualifications and other parameters for flying in here, I think a little more specifics would help ease people's minds that there's numbers in place. You can say that we've changed the parameters that we fly, or we've changed the training. Simply changing the training could be as simple as here, read the Alaska Supplemental and know the airport. So a little more specifics would probably ease some fears. And then I kind of go to more of a culture of safety. A couple of the previous incidents that Raven or ERA or whoever it was at the time had, the NTSB findings were partly critical of the management at the time. And what concerns me is that Raven has taken a big bite taking on this market, and that what gets lost in trying to make sure that they get planes in here is the safety aspect.
Let me reassure you, it's the other way around. I mean, we have to be safe, and we have to be compliant with not only the FAA but also our own internal standards, and that's what we've put in place, and we do have a huge focus. Anybody in the Raven Air group, we have something called Get Safe Go. If anybody feels that there's something happening that is not safe, they can stop doing what is happening, whether that's an aircraft or whether it's a process for loading an aircraft, whether it's our smaller ones or our Dash or our Saab. Everybody, and we're building a culture and have a culture that allows us to say, no, stop, that's not safe. Our first briefing every single morning is about safety, like many other companies that have big operations. That is our focus every day. But thank you for your comments. I'll take those back with me.
Along with that, the experience really does play a big role in that, and especially in the local experience, because anytime you have a runway that has a mountain or a hill right next to it, the wind at that location is going to play a huge impact on it. And I think that goes back to what one of these people back here were saying. They'd like to see that the pilots are coming in here and know when they see a certain wind condition, they know how the plane is going to react when they come into that runway. Because the first time I landed here, we had a tailwind on both ends of the runway, and that is really common around here. And so, and as you know, you've got specific requirements for wind, what your pilots can and can't land that with at that runway. But if those pilots haven't experienced the wind that way, they don't know what to expect. I mean, they've got a head knowledge of it, but they've never actually done it. So I think it's a very valid question whether or not those pilots have come in here and landed under those kinds of conditions.
We're very conscious of the wind's coming around the mountain and coming at both ends of the runway, and if those conditions are not right, then we won't be landing. That should be the situation that's in place. But again, going back to the point Missy has made, I mean, for those of you who are around when Shell was down here a lot, I mean, we were flying twice a day in here with our dashes. We have got the experience, and we're building up that experience with those pilots that have got the special qualification.
Do you have a set amount of hours that a dash pilot has to have before he gets from the left-hand seat, before he gets from the captain's chair?
I believe there is. I don't know what it is, Frank.
I think that, Clint's a pilot, Mr. Bell's a pilot, and, naturally they're all flying around if the weather is crappy, but in their small planes. But, the more I think about the tragedy we had in October, and not that pilot not having a lot of experience, like on a day like that, he probably should have went over town and came in and landed into the wind on 31. But that's kind of a, you know, you got to have some experience if you're going to go do that route. You got to get by the APL crane and dive over the fuel dock. But that would have made it landing into the wind, and it wouldn't have been as hairy as coming in between the mountains. But, you know, that's kind of the things that you got to have from your experience out here. And I think that's what people are hoping, that these pilots, we have most experienced pilots. I know when Penn Air was here and Alaska Airlines coming in with the 737-200, they all had their senior pilots on the route here that had a lot of hours.
For everybody else's edification, I guess, you know, the Saab may be, I mean, the Dash 8 may be slower than the Saab 2000, but it's far better plane for landing on this runway. I mean, it's way more capable than the Saab 2000 is.
Yes, it's a short takeoff and landing aircraft. It's called a stall aircraft. It needs less runway. That's why the Dash 8 has been quite honestly successful here throughout all the, whether it's on a tarmac runway or where we fly into dirt runways as well. But it's a slower aircraft and is well suited to flying down here.
I'll just ask this really quick. So I'll ask it directly. I guess, is it possible to get some handouts on the pilots just for a short period of time so we can?
I don't think we'd want to do that. I can ask, but I think we won't be doing that. But I will ask.
Hi, my name is Vicki Williams. I am a person that flies out of here for medical every 8 weeks. I just talked to APIA and asked them to work with you guys on us medical people that fly quite often. You guys do a milk run, which is pretty hard on us and our bodies. So I asked him to contact you guys in Anchorage and with the hospital to try not to put us people that can't sit long and have serious medical issues with our backs and stuff. Try not to do the milk run, you know. So I asked APIA to call the hospital and to contact you guys and try to work something out for us medical people. I go out every 8 weeks, and sometimes with you guys already being 3 hours, and then you guys don't make it here, you got to go all the way back again, you know. It's pretty hard, you know. So, you know, through the milk run and then still don't make it here. So I asked APIA to call you guys and the hospital and try to work something out to where the hospital knows the milk run and try not to schedule us people for the milk run.
So when you're referring to the milk run, what do you mean?
You know, when you do a bunch of stops.
Well, we
recall.
Right. Okay. So on the journey from Anchorage down here to Onalaska, we plan to have a stop.
For fuel.
And on the way back, 95% of the time, if the winds are right, you won't stop. On my flight on Monday, I came down direct. We didn't stop, and we had 30 people on board. So those flights are not scheduled to stop anywhere. And even when we do stop in Cold Bay, we are not selling seats from Anchorage to Cold Bay or Cold Bay back. So, because it could stop in King Salmon, it could stop in Dillingham, depending on weather and winds, etc. But we only plan one stop, and that is a technical stop for fueling. Okay.
Yeah, kind of a parallel question. It's my understanding that there's no assigned seats on any Raven flights.
Not at the moment. We are we're trying to develop our system so that we can do that. We'll probably have it in place February or March, where we will have assigned seating on the aircraft. At the moment, it's open seating.
People that have difficulty traveling, or if Frank comes to sit by me, it's different if you were flying to Homer and it's a few minutes, but if you're talking about a 4-hour flight that might turn around.
Yes, so please ask when you, if you do have and you need extra, either the leg room or the front row, please ask when you check in.
I wasn't talking about Frank's size. Frank's not he's not a good flyer.
Hey, I'm going to play first because I got a I hit for 83 plays, so I get the pilot seat right away. Yeah, but Frank's smaller now than he was a while ago. But
it goes back around to how does that work, I guess, is that we compete for the front spot in line at the door to get a good seat, or...
Right.
Because I know I, and this is actually back in our South 340, my son and his buddy on the basketball team played. Donnie's 6'5", and they got stuck in the seat in front of the exit row, which doesn't recline and it's smaller, and I think Donnie had his knees in the window, and so they're both like this for hours, so it becomes more important on a longer flight, which may be different than some of your other routes, and it's...
I'd like to go back to, we were talking about safety, and have you, you know, I think since 2008 up to date, how many crashes have there been? And I think some of them were fatal, but I think you have twice as long, twice as far to fly over water. Of that, you know, I think I want to be reassured your pilots are experienced and your equipment is up to par. And what measures have you taken to improve your safety record since 2008?
Well, first of all, the incidents and the accidents you're referring to were on the Part 135 side, not on our dashes or the Saabs. So those incidents at the Raven Air Group have been related to the Raven Air Connect side. And what we've been doing is we've raised our minimums in terms of when we will fly due to weather. We probably raise those by anything between 10 to 15% to ensure that the weather conditions are correct. I don't know, sorry, the number exactly how many there were. But as far as the Dash 8 is concerned and the Saab, the only incident has been the recent tragedy that we had on the 17th of October.
What's the possibility of getting some more life vests in the thing? Because we do come over water, and we all know that if we go in that water, we're going to die.
So we,
I would like, you know, instead of just six life vests in the front seats, the people in the back seats, they're not going to find the body. It'd be nice to have closure for the families that have to pick up the pieces to be able to have a body.
Any other questions? Yes.
I guess on a lighter topic, so in the interim until we figure out what's going on in our, you know, in the future of Dutch Harbor travel, whether it be through Alaska or Raven, is there any way, you know, you could maybe give us a deal with the points instead of making it 100 points, make it like 50 like other places? I recognize, we all recognize like how much more it is, and it wouldn't be like a cost benefit to you as a company, but I mean, any sort of like deals would be kind of cool. And yeah, and like racks would be better than a, I think like jackets, but it's a different topic. Like anything like that maybe, or deals?
That's what we're trying to do with the double points at the moment. I mean, as I said, that's for...
That's like a couple months. We plan trips like 5-6 months out.
I understand.
We try to plan 12-18. That's really what I'm focused on, not like right now.
Please bear with us. We're learning. We're trying to work out. I have responsibilities to make sure that, which is, I think, the benefit to all of us, to ensure that we are operating the route economically. If we don't, then it's going to be, you know, we will have less flights, and that's not good for any of us. And that's, there's a balance between that. We've certainly got the feedback over the last couple of days about the program that we have in place, and we will do all possible to be as generous as we possibly can. But I have, again, 19 other communities and another 100 communities that use the same program, and it's statewide. Yeah.
You know, speak of yeah.
No, I will. We will do everything we can. Thank you. Okay. Well, listen, thank you, everyone. I hope it's helped in terms of getting a better understanding of what we've been doing, but more importantly, of what we're trying to do for the scheduled services down here. I hear your frustrations. I think it's loud and clear what you want us to try and do, and I encourage you to talk to Alaska Airlines, and I will do so again. So please do so. But thank you for your honest feedback. And
do you have any plans of having follow-up ones here in the coming months?
Yeah, I think we'll probably do something after probably in February or March.